Right, we're beginning here on the top of Yudayin Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing what's said in the Mishnah, Kama Yochal Min HaTevel. How much do we need to eat of Tevel in order to be Chayav? There, the Mishnah has a machloket as to whether it's under the standard rubric of Achila, which would be a Kazayit, or is there something more unique about Tevel because Tevel can be removed or taken care of by taking off chuma by chita achat. Just take off one kernel of wheat, and you can discharge your obligation with regards to chuma gedola, and make it ois tevel, to take away the shame tevel from it. So the Mishnah had a machloket, kama yochal min tevel v'yechayav, Rabbi Shimon omer kol shu, chamim omrim kizayit, amar lehen Rabbi Shimon, yatem modim li bochel nimala kol shu shu chayav. If you eat an isur of nimala, like we saw yesterday, then it doesn't matter that it's a gezayit or not, that you're chayav. Amrlo, they respond to him, mipnei sheik biryata, because that is, as it is, formed, that it's a full life force. Amlehem, af hita achat kibiryata. So too is the sense that just like the nemala is just a birya, so too you have a chita achat, which is kibiryata. So you're taking a whole kernel, and again, the whole kernel can discharge the obligation with regards to Bimafrish Truma from the Tevel. So that does have significance in this case. So the Gemara is discussing that and says, Amar Bibi, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Machloket Bechita. Their Machloket only revolves around kernels of wheat. Aval Bekemach, if it's flour, Dibriya kol Kizayit. Everybody believes that it'd be a Kizayit. Because of what Rabbi Shimon said in the Mishnah, it's Kibiryata. When you're speaking about it in its original form and a whole entity, then you could speak about lower thresholds than a kazayit. But when you're speaking about something that's been processed already, then the only thing that you can consider is achila, which is a kazayit. And so Rabbi Shimon would agree by kemach, by flour, that a kazayit is enough. Rabbi Irmiya, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, kemach loket bezo, kach machloket bezo. On the other hand, we have Rabbi Mirmiya quoting Rish Lakish, saying that the machloket persists. The machloket that they have by the kernels is also true by the kemach. So here you have two Amoraim in the name of Rabbi Shimon Lakish debating as to whether Rabbi Shimon Shita is unique to the kernels of wheat or would be applicable also to flour. It's not our Mishnah. Amar lehem Rabbi Shimon, yatem modim li bochel nimala kol shu, shu chayav. Amru lo mipnei shehi kibir yata. Amar lehem, he responded to them, av chita achat kibir yata. Chita in kemach lo. So they want to be medayek out of the Mishnah, like the version of Rav Bibi, which is that Rabbi Shimon's response to the Chachamim is that a chita is like a nimala. But that would imply only a chita has this din, but kemach, flour, does not have that din. So Gemara answers, on behalf of Rabbi Yirmiya, Ibrahim kamar luhu. Rabbi Shimon is responding according to the shita of the Chachamim. He is answering the Chachamim, l'shitotam, lididi, according to me, afilu kemach nami. Even flour, we'd only need a koshu. Ela lididhu odului mihat. According to your shita, at least admit to me, tichita achad kibir yata. Because the Chachamim had responded to him with regards to a nimala, that the reason a nimala is significant is because it's a birya. So Rabbi Shimon says back to them, the shita tchem, at least agree by kernels of wheat that they should be the same as a nimala, as an ant. And if that's the case, you should at least agree to my position with regards to chita, even though you may not agree by kema. Rabbanon respond to him, Biryat nishama chashuva. You're talking about a live entity, a whole live entity, that's significant. Chita lo chashuva. A chita, a kernel of wheat, is not significant, even though it's an entire birya creation, but it's not significant in and of itself because it doesn't have a life force in it. It's not alive. And so that would be the difference between a nimala and a chita. Over here, Balei Tosafot asks from the Gemara in Chulin, where the Gemara says that gida nasheh is considered to be kibir yata. Gidin Hashem is considered to be as it was created, and it takes on significance because of that. Tosafot says, well, how are you going to explain Gidin Hashem? That's no different than a chita achat. And if you want to say, well, it derives from an animal that's alive, what about a nevela? A nevela also came from something that's alive, and nobody thinks to say that that's kibir yata. So Tosafot answers that this idea of kibir yata and it has a nishama in it, is based on whether when you cut the thing into pieces, does it retain its shame or does it lose its shame? So he says that if you, for instance, take a Gidin Hashem and then you cut it into pieces, it loses its name or shame, Gidin Hashem. For that reason, it's significant as a birya when it is whole. And a nevela, which if you cut up, would not be, change its name, would not be different than the nevela when it's whole. It's still a nevela when you cut it into its component parts. And for that reason, it's not considered to be significant. That is what the Tolos Belia Tosafot say here. If you go to the Gemara in Chulin, Rishonim there, like the Ramban, the Ritva, others state that there are actually three qualifications in order to be significant. The first of which is what's mentioned over here, that it has to be the whole entity the way it was created. It has to have a nishama. It has to come from a live object, or it has to be a live object. So that's number one. Gidin Hashed derives from a live animal. And over here, you have a nimala, which is a living animal. The second thing is that it has to lose its shame when it's divisible or when you cut it up. So if you cut up the Gidin Hashed, it loses its shame. And by the ant as well, if you cut it up, it loses its shame, that it will no longer be called an ant. An ant is that entity that is the whole thing. And the third thing is that it has to be something that the Isur is there from the moment that that object is created. So those are the three things. You have to have the whole entity. It has to come from something that's alive. It has to be something that the Isur is there from the moment that that object is created. And it has to lose its shame when you cut it up. So in that way, Gidin Hashed qualifies. So does Nimala. On the other hand, Chita and Nevela do not qualify. Nevela, because when you cut it up, it remains a Nevela, so it doesn't lose its shame. And the Chita, because it's not a live entity, and therefore it's not considered to be Kibir Yata. Alright, Tanya Kavote de Rabbi Yirmiyah. We have a Braita that supports Rabbi Yirmiyah's view in Reish Lakish, explaining that the Machloket persists, which is Rabbi Shimon Omer, Koshahu the Makot. This is a sheet of Rabbi Shimon, which we will see in Shavuot, which is that Rabbi Shimon believes that any amount makes you chayav for Makot, lo amru kezayit aliyin korban. The measurement of a kezayit by achila is only relevant by a korban. So he says, in order to be chayav a korban, then you have to meet the threshold of a kezayit. Aside from that, you don't need a kezayit. Any kosher who would suffice in these situations to make you chayav for malkot. So over here as well, wouldn't matter if it was a chita or if it was kamach, a kosher who should obligate you in malkot, which is the topic of the Mishnah where Rabbi Shimon is speaking. So that would be supportive of Rabbi Yirmiyah in the name of Reish Lakish's view that Rabbi Shimon would even argue by the case of kamach. The Ritva over here tries to give an explanation as to why there's a difference between a kosher by makot and a kezayit by korban, even though technically it's a halacha, the Moshe Misinai, that's where Rabbi Shimon learns it from. Nevertheless, you try to explain the logic behind it, which is that malkot come from somebody violating b'mezid, a iser in the Torah. They're intentionally violating a restriction, a negative precept of the Torah. So once they are already going against the Torah in a willful manner, it shouldn't matter how much they eat, because they're intentionally abrogating the law of the Torah. So the shi'ur no longer is relevant. What's relevant here is the rebellious nature of what you're doing. Any amount would be significant. On the other hand, when it comes to a korban, that is brought b'shogeg, that's brought when you do something unintentionally. When you do something unintentionally, it's not necessarily about what you did, because you did it unintentionally. You weren't acting rebelliously in what you did. The problem is that you got to a threshold or a point by which you've done something of significance that was not permitted, even though it was unintentional. So over there, you need a shiur to give it the significance, because inherently it's not a rebellious type of action. And so then you need a chashivut in what you're doing, and that chashivut comes from the size of the object or the shiur. And that way he describes the difference between why by a kezayit, why by mezid, or by malkot, you would not require any shiur, and why by korban, you would require a shiur of kezayit. The next Mishnah says, Ochel bikurim, achalo koralehem. This is a continuation of the first Mishnah, which is telling you, lavin, negative precepts for which you get malkot. So the first of which is, if a person eats the bikurim, here it's given to the kohen to eat, if he eats it before the balim said, mikra bikurim, over the bikurim, you'll get malkot. We'll see in the Gemara whose shita that is, and why that is the case. Bekodshei kodashim chutz leklayim. If someone eats kodshei kodashim outside of the curtains, this is a reference to the Mishkan, where there were curtains around the chatzer of the Mishkan. So if you eat it outside of that Chatzer HaMishkan, then you're in violation of eating Kodesh HaKodeshim in the location where they're supposed to be eaten. Whereas in the Mikdash, it would be the Azara, or the walls around the Azara. You'd have to eat inside the Azara, the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Seems that it mentions Klayim because it stems from the Midbar and the Mishkan, where the halacha was given, but it would have equal application to the Mikdash by the Azara, even though that's not mentioned in the Mishnah. Kodeshi Kalim, when it comes to other Kodeshim that are not Kodeshi Kodeshim are like a Chatat, and a Sham, and Ola. Kodeshim Kalim are Shlamim, Todah, Pesach, Maser, Bechor, those are all Kodeshim Kalim. Umaiser Sheni, and Maiser Sheni, which is the Maser that needs to be brought up and eaten inside the walls of Yerushalayim, Chutz L'Chomah. If you eat either of those outside the walls of Yerushalayim, then you would be Chayav Malkot for that. In the time of the Mishkan, it was what's called B'chol HaRo'eh. As long as you could see Mishkan Shiloh, you were considered to be equivalent to being inside the walls of Yerushalayim. HaShover Et Ha'etzem B'Pesach HaTohor HaRizeh Lokeh Arbaim. Someone who breaks a bone in the Korban HaPesach, which is a kosher tahor Korban HaPesach, then you get Malkot for that. There's really no Kiddush in this. It's an explicit pasuk in the Torah. Be'etzem lo tishberu bo. That you shall not break a bone inside of the Korban HaPesach. So the reason it might be brought over here is for the subsequent din that derives from this. Rashi mentioned on the first Mishnah that the negative precepts that are listed here are either because they're associated with karet, or because there's something unusual about them, or something we wouldn't have known. And Rashi mentioned that even though some of these Surim or Levin are things we would have known, nevertheless, they are packaged together with other items that we wouldn't have known or are not as obvious. And this is probably a case like that where Shover Etzem B'Pesach Tor, you get Malkot for that. That's explicit in the Torah. Etzem Lo Tishberu Bo. Aval. But Hamutir B'Tahor, someone who leaves over from a Korban past the time period which are allocated to eat it. Vashover B'Tameh, and someone who breaks a bone in a Korban Pesach that is Tamei, Ainolo Ke'arbaim, there you will not get Malkot. So by the Pesach, as Rashi notes, it says, Etzem lo tishberu bo. And the Gemara learns from bo b'taharato, velo b'tumato. You get only in it. When it's a kosher, tahor, Korban HaPesach, then you get Malkot for breaking the bone. On the other hand, if it is a Tamei, Korban HaPesach, then you would not get any Malkot for breaking the bone of the Korban HaPesach. Now, it could be that it's Tamei, you're not eating it, and there's still no restriction against breaking the bone. It also could be Tamei, and you are eating it. The Korban HaPesach is the one Korban where Tuma Hutra B'tzibur not only affects the ability to bring the Korban, but also allows you to eat the Korban B'tuma. That is because the Ikar Mitzvah of Korban HaPesach is Achilat HaPesach, is the eating of the Pesach. Unlike by other Korbanot, where the major aspect is the bringing of the Korban, putting it on the Mizbeach, by the Korban HaPesach, it's to eat it. And therefore, the Gemara concludes that if you're going to say Tuma Hutra B'tzibor, Tuma Dukhuya B'tzibor, which allows you to bring the Korban HaPesach B'tuma, it would not simply be that you bring it B'tuma, it also means that you would eat it B'tuma. So there you have a possibility that you could be eating the Korban HaPesach B'tuma, but there would not be a restriction against Etzem Lo Tishberu Bo in that instance. As well as the case of motir, if you leave over. The Torah specifies specifically by Korban HaPesach, do not leave it over till the morning. But it's also a restriction in other Korbanot for the time periods that are relevant to those Korbanot. The reason there is for what we said earlier, because notar is a lav anitak liasei. It's a not asei that results in an asei, which is do not leave it over. If you do leave it over, then burn it. And since it's a lav anitak liasei, you won't get malkot for it. Again, we discussed that heavily over the last 2 days, daf. Hanotel Eim Alabanim. This is what we quoted yesterday from the Mishnah in Chulin, which is also noted over here for a different reason. In the Mishnah in Chulin, it's discussing Shiluach HaKein in more detail. Over here, it's brought because of the fact that you don't get Malkot or do get Malkot for Shiluach HaKein, which is Hanotel Eim Alabanim, the one who takes the children without chewing away the mother bird. Rav Yehuda Omer Loken. If it says you get Malkot for that, the Einu Mishaleach, and you don't send away the mother bird after the fact. This is what we saw yesterday in Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, that he thinks that, obviously, what the Chamim are about to say, that it's a Lava Nitak, they say, he disagrees with that. Rashi claims that he thinks that it's an assay that came before the lav, and therefore it's not a lav nitak the assay. On the other hand, the Ritva, as we saw yesterday, suggested that the way that it's written in the pasuk, the assay comes after the lav. So you can't claim that it's an assay before the lav. That's the Ritva, the Shita To, that the way it's written in the Torah matters. And all he says is that Rabbi Yehuda believes that the restriction here is a lav, and the shaleach kishalach is just a reinforcement of the lav. It says, don't do this, but rather this, but not that don't do this, and if you do this, then do this, but it's all together in one package, which tells you this is the din. Don't do this, but do this, and it's one din and not a lav nitak d'asei. In either case, Rabbi Yehuda says you get malkot then for it, because there is no nitak d'asei over here, whereas the chachamim amim, mishalmeach ve'no lokeh. Shoo it away, and you don't get malkot. They think it is a lav nitak d'asei. Zeaklaun, this is the principle. Kol mitzvat lo taseh sheyesh ba kum asei. Any mitzvat lo taseh, any negative precept that has a positive commandment that comes afterwards if you violate the negative precept, ain chayivin alei. You do not get malkot for it because it is not domeh to the paradigmatic lav of malkot, which is lo tachsom shor b'disho. There is only a lav without any assay to rectify the situation. And again, we spoke about that both on Daf Tedvav and Tedzayin, about the nature of lav nitak d'asei, as well as an assay that comes before the lav, as to why you would be patur or chayav, depending on how you view the assay's relationship to the lav itself. Now Gemara says about the first line in our Mishnah, which seems very difficult. How could it be that mikra bikurim is me'akev? First of all, we know from the Mishnayot in bikurim that if a person brings the bikurim after the zman of simcha, but before the deadline, basically from, it's in Yonah Dioma, from Sukkot until Chanukah, in that period of time, you may be Bikurim Veino Koreh. You bring the Bikurim and you don't read, which tells you that the Mikra Bikurim is not Me'akev. How can you claim here that a person who eats the Bikurim before Mikra Bikurim would be in violation of a lav? So Amarav Abarchana Rabbi Yochanan, Zod Divrei Rabbi Ativa Stimta. This Mishnah, which is a Stam Mishnah, is really a Dat Yachid, and it's the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. So Stim To over here means that it's a Stam Mishnah that is not really unauthored or unknown authored Mishnah. It is the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. Gemara will offer no proof to this, but it must be that he had this Misorah, that this was Shita of Rabbi Akiva, and it was a Dat Yachid. Rashi notes over here that they use the word Stim To, not just to mean a Stam Mishnah that is authored by Rabbi Akiva, but rather it's a common occurrence. There are many times in Shas, but we'll find a Stam Mishnah that is really Rabbi Akiva. So it's a recurring phenomenon. It's not just here. It's in many places. And that's why the Gemara uses the term Stim Ta. Others suggest, maybe even be a derivative of what Rashi is saying, that the Gemara in other places tells us that the students of Rabbi Akiva are basically the Stam in every situation. Stam Mishnah, Rabbi Meir. Stam Sivra, Rabbi Yehuda. So all those Stam Tanaic works are students of Rabbi Akiva. They're all Tamidim of Rabbi Akiva, and therefore the Gemara makes a statement that all these Stam is according to Rabbi Akiva, because it's his Tamidim that put together all these great Tanaic works and are the unspoken author in these cases. That might be what it means here, Rabbi Akiva Stim To, is because in general, Rabbi Akiva is vicariously the author of all Mishnayot. Aval Chachamim Omrim, the Chachamim disagree with this position of Rabbi Akiva, Bikurim Hanacha Me'akevet Behem, Kriya Enem Me'akevet Behem. This is what you probably would have thought, which is that Bikurim have a requirement to be put next to the Mizbeach, a Hanacha, and then touched to the corner of the Mizbeach. That Hanacha is Me'akev, whereas the Kriya, the reading of the Parsha of Mikra Bikurim, is not Me'akev Bikurim. Like we noted before, you can bring Bikurim without saying Mikra Bikurim. So then why is the Hanacha Me'akev? So as Rashi notes over here, it's because there's a duplication in the Pasuk. When it comes to Kodeshim, we'll see this principle when we get into the Masechtot dealing with Kodeshim, that there is a principle in Kodeshim that anything that is repeated twice in the Pasuk is Le'akev. The first thing they say it is Le'mitzvah. Le'chatkile, you should do it this way. The Torah repeats the requirement to do something, means that it's not only a mitzvah, it's me'akev, that you must do it. And Rashi notes over here, by the Bikurim, it says, v'nichol difnei Hashem Elokecha, you have to place it down. And then it says, v'yenachto difnei Hashem Elokecha. So the word hanacha, or the imperative to put it down by the mizbeach before Hashem, is repeated twice in the Parsha Mikra Bikurim. That tells you that it's not only a mitzvah, but it is me'akev. So that was what the Chachamim say is me'akev. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says that even Mikra Bikurim is me'akev. The Gemara brings no source for this position of Rabbi Akiva, nor does it give the reason behind Rabbi Akiva's position. What it does bring is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, who does seemingly has the same position, and maybe the Gemara is hinting through that, that that must have been Rabbi Akiva's position as well, which is Lema, Zo Dibri Rabbi Shimon Stimta. Why don't you say the Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah according to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? Hakamash Malon. So what the Gemara says is we conclude from here, to Rabbi Akiva, to Rabbi Shimon severely. Rabbi Akiva really does subscribe to the position of Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says that it's Rabbi Akiva Stimta, even though again it has no proof to that. All it's telling you is yes, Rabbi Shimon could have been the author of our Mishnah, but I'm telling you that Rabbi Akiva was the author of our Mishnah, and in doing so now, you would equate the positions of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva. Again, it's not far-fetched because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva. So it's actually an interesting formulation over here that the Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva holds of Rabbi Shimon. It's most likely the other way around, which is Rabbi Shimon holds of Rabbi Akiva. But because we know Rabbi Shimon's position and we don't know Rabbi Akiva's position, we're therefore saying it in the opposite form, which is Rabbi Akiva holds of Rabbi Shimon. My Rabbi Shimon. So what is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's position here? Titania, because we have a braita, it's premised on the pasuk that's found in Devarim, Perek Yud Bet, pasuk Yud Zayin, lo tuchal lechol bisharecha, masar degantcha, v'tiroshcha, v'yitzarecha, u'bechorot v'karcha, v'tzonecha, v'chol nederecha, asher tidor, v'nid v'otecha, u'trumat yadecha, ki im, lifnei Hashem elokecha, tochlenu, v'makom esher yivchar Hashem elokecha bo, ata v'bin chavitecha, v'abdecha, v'amatecha, v'levi v'asher bisharecha, so here you have a requirement from the Torah to eat all these items in Yerushalayim, inside the Chumot, or we'll see, maybe there are other boundaries in which you must eat them. That is brought by this Pasuk. You have a list of items that are in the Pasuk to tell you that they must be done in that following manner. And over here, Rabbi Shimon says, the Trumat Yadecha at the end of the Pasuk, Ilu Bikurim. That's a reference to Bikurim. That is because Yad plays an important role in the Bikurim, which is that you give it from the Yad of the Balim to the Yad of the Kohen, and then the Yadayim of the Kohen and the Balim together do the Hanafa, the Tnufat HaBikurim. So the Yad is a integral part to regards to the Bikurim. And so Rabbi Shimon says that Truma Fidecha, which Bikurim are a form of Truma, refers to Bikurim. Rabbi Shimon, Ma Bazel Lamdeinu. What is this coming to teach us? This Trumat Yadecha that says you must eat it, Bisharecha, what does it tell you? Im lo ochlam chutz lechoma, if you're telling me it's coming to teach you that you must eat the Bikurim inside the walls of Yerushalayim, like other Kodoshim, kal v'chomer mimaser hakal. I would have known that from Maaser, which is a less stringent type of restriction, or has limitations that are not as severe as Truma. And so therefore, if I know by Maser, it must be eaten inside the walls of Yerushalayim, then I certainly would have known by Bikurim that they must be eaten inside the walls of Yerushalayim. Ma Maser akal uchlan chutz l'choma loke. Anybody who eats Maser Sheni outside the walls of Yerushalayim is in violation of the law, v'lo tuchal le'achol b'sharech, and gets makot. Bikurim lo koshukein. And certainly Bikurim would be subject to that. Halo ba'katuv, ela lo'uchel mi Bikurim, achak lo kara lehem. That must mean that the pasuk is coming to teach you something unique about Bikurim that is differentiated from Maaser. If by Maaser it's teaching you don't eat outside the walls of Yerushalayim, then that we would have known for Bikurim as well. So now what's something we can learn here that's unique to Bikurim? The fact that Kriyata Bikurim or Mikra Bikurim now is Ma'akev, your ability to eat the Bikurim, and if you eat them before that, Shehu Lokeh, you will get Malkot for that. And even though generally, when we use a limud of Imenu Inyan Lazer, we don't need it for this. Let's lose it for something else. We generally have the something else be correlated or connected to the original Pashtuta Pasuk. So the Ritva over here notes that that is true here as well because each of these are boundaries. It might be boundaries in place of eating, might be boundaries about who can eat, might be boundaries about when you can eat it. So these are all types of boundaries, and therefore if it's Imenu Inyan, to what we needed before because we would have known that through a Kal V'Chomer, Given for this issue is correlated with the issue you would have thought the pasuk is speaking about. Then the Braita continues and says, "V'nidvotecha," says your voluntary offerings. Zo toda ushlamim. That's a reference to a toda ushlamim that can be brought as nidavot and are generally brought as nidavot because you don't want to have the personal responsibility for ensuring that the korban gets to Yerushalayim and is given. And so that when we say nidvotecha, we must be speaking about korbanot that are brought on a voluntary basis, are brought as some sort of commitment from the individual to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that would be a reference to the Todah Shlamim. Am Rabbi Shimon, ma ba zeh lelamdeinu. Once again, what is this teaching us? Im lo chlam chutz lechoma, if it's going to teach you about the fact that you must eat them inside the walls of Yerushalayim, not outside, ka v'chomer maaser. Once again, you can learn that from maaser. Ma lo ba katuv ela. So then, what is the pasuk here for? Same ka v'chomer we had before for bikurim, for maaser, you can do with Todah Shlamim. Ela lochel betodah ubishlamim lifnei zrikah shuloket. Comes to teach you something unique about the Todah and Shlamim, which is if you eat them before zrikat adam, then you will get makot ubichorot. So that again, he is moving to the pasuk actually backwards, and now he goes to bichorot. Zeha bichor. That's a reference to the korban of a bichor. I'm Reb Shimon Baba Zeh Lelamdeinu. Once again, what extra information is it teaching us with regards to a bechor? If it's speaking about eating them outside the walls of Yerushalayim, we already know that from Maser Akal. It's coming to give you a restriction against eating the item before Zrikat Adam, that you can learn as a kavachomer from Todah and Shlamim. Bechor, which is more chamur than Todah and Shlamim, would then, of course, have a restriction against it being eaten lifnei zrikat adam. So I wouldn't need you to specify that in particular. I could have learned that from the Todah and Shlamim. Halo bakatu, velo ochel min habachor, afilu lachar zrika, shuloket. Comes to teach you that there is another restriction, which is someone who eats from the korban of the bechor after zrikat adam. After zrikat adam, it's actually mutar b'achila. But it's only mutar b'achila, the kohanim. It is not mutar b'achila, the zarim. And so if a zar eats it after or post zrikat adam, loke, you will get malkot for that, because that's a new item that you would learn that's particular to bechor. And then it says in the pasuk, bikarcha vitzonecha, zochatat ve'asham. That references to the chatat and asham. It's not clear here how Rabbi Shimon knows that that's the case, but we would assume that maybe the chataot and the ashamot came in general from bakar and son. And therefore, the Braita here associates them with the Chatat and the Asham. Amar Shimon, Ma'abaz, Lelamdeinu. Once again, what is unique about the Chatat and the Asham that could teach us something we don't know already? Im lo chlam chutz lechoma, if to tell you that you're not allowed to eat the Chatat and Asham outside the walls, kal v'chomer mimaser. There you would have a kal v'chomer from maser that you must eat it inside your shalayim. Ilif nezrika, if it is to give you a restriction against consuming the korban before zrikat adam, kal v'chomer mitodah shlamim. That you can learn from todah shlamim. Im lachar zrika, if it is after zrikat adam, kal v'chomer mibechor. Then you can learn that out from bechor, that there's a restriction even after zrikat adam on a zar consuming the korban. Halo ba katuv ela, lochel mechatat v'sham, afilu lachar zrika, chutz l'koim mishulokeh. Comes to teach you by the Chatat and Hashem that even after Zrikat Adam, if they're eaten outside of the location which is particular to them, then you will get Malkot. So what it's doing is adding an additional dimension, which is by Chatat and Hashem. Not only is there a restriction against eating outside the walls of Yerushalayim, it's actually a restriction against eating outside the walls of the Azara or in the Mishkan, in the Chatzer, and not outside the Klaim or outside the curtains that are around the Chatzer. So that's what Bakar and Tzon teach us. Then, Nidarecha, which is mentioned in the Pasuk, is Zo'olah. Again, it seems to be that there's a correlation between taking a neder and bringing an olah. And so therefore, in Nidarecha, we would assume it means an olah. Am Rabbi Shimon, ma ba zeh lelamdeinu. Once again, what is this teaching us? Im lo chlam chutz lechoma. It's going to teach you that you're not allowed to eat them outside the walls of Yerushalayim. Kal v'chomer maser. That you can get from Meisr Sheni. Im lifnei zrika. If you say there's a restriction to eat it before Zrikat Adam, kal v'chomer mitodah shlamim. That you can learn from Todah and Shlamim. Im lachar zrika, if it's after zrika the time that there's a restriction in eating it, kavachomer b'bechor. That you would know from the Qurban of Bechor, where we said the din that after zrika damim, there's a restriction against the zar consuming it. Im chutz leklaim, it's going to tell you there's a restriction against eating it outside the walls of the azara, or outside the curtains of the chatzer of Mishkan, kavachomer mechatat v'asham. That you can learn out from chatat v'asham as a kavachomer. Haloba katuv, ela lochel min ola, lakar zrika, afilu bifnim, shuloke. That comes to teach you that if someone eats from the Qurban ola, after zrikat adam, when a korban is normally nen mutar to be eaten, afilu bifnim, you're inside the location of where it is permissible to eat the korban of the kodshei kodashim, which is inside the azara. Nevertheless, you get malkot because of the fact that no one is allowed to eat it. Not a zara, not even a kohen can consume it, and therefore here you have a source for the fact that a korban olah, even if it has all the other trappings that are right about it, for kodshei kodashim, nevertheless, a kohen who eats or consumes it will still be in violation. Of course, kosher ken azar that does the same thing, which we'll see later, will be chayav malkot for eating the olah, because the olah is kalil l'Hashem. It goes entirely on the mizbeach. Now, as Rashi points out here, the lavin that we are learning over here from this braita, while the lavin themselves might be a chidush, the halacha that we're saying that they teach us is not a chidush. The fact that the olah goes on the Mizbeach Kalil Lashem, is actually in the Pasuk, Vachu Bnei Aron, that Bnei Aron have to put the Korban Olah in Vayikra Aleph on the Mizbeach, and put all the parts of the Korban on the Mizbeach. So that's Kalil He, Velo L'Achila. It goes entirely on the Mizbeach, not Achila. So that's an assay, and from that would derive an Isra assay. Rabbi Shimon's Kiddush over here is, not only is there an assay, in many of these instances, there's also a Lota assay, which derives from that Pasuk that we read in Devarim Yud Bet. Now the Gemara says about that, Amar Rava, Yelida Ime, Rabbi Shimon Teleit. A mother who gives birth, she gave birth to someone like Rabbi Shimon. Bimlo, if not, lo Teleit, don't bother giving birth. It's an interesting formulation. Rashi says that it means that every woman should daven when she's giving birth, that she should have a child like Rabbi Shimon. Although it doesn't sound like that way from the Gemara, because it seems to be speaking about a mother rather than a woman. It seems that it means that someone who is davening for their mother to give birth, they should daven that she should give birth to a child like Rabbi Shimon. Although the negative statement associated with this seems pretty harsh, which says, if not, they shouldn't give birth. And therefore, if you look in the Ritva, he actually says to take that out of the Girsa, because it doesn't seem to be a fair statement. Meaning that there's no toilet to anybody in the world besides Rabbi Shimon, that doesn't make so much sense. It's nice to daven for someone like Rabbi Shimon, but if you don't have someone like Rabbi Shimon, there's still a value in giving birth. And so therefore the Ritva suggests taking out that girso. But the basic idea is if one wants to daven for whether it's their spouse or their mother to have a child, it should daven that they have a child like Rabbi Shimon, because Rava obviously sees in what Rabbi Shimon did here a certain streak of brilliance, and therefore he's saying that Rabbi Shimon is unusual. Obviously we know many of the stories of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that give him the sense and aura of being the individual he was. But nevertheless, Rav over here sees in this bright a streak of brilliance of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and says that that's what everybody should daven for, that they have children like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Avagav de'it lehu pircha. Despite the fact that which Rabbi Shimon said is untrue. So Rav gives him all these accolades in a sense that, wow, what a drasha. Everybody should have a child like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And then he goes on and like whispers afterwards and says, you know what? Rabbi Shimon's din really doesn't work. What he did doesn't work. So then what is he so enamored with that the Gemara will ask afterwards? But first of all, the Gemara is going to list for us here the problems in the logic of that braita, which is my chumrah to bikurim imaser. We assumed that bikurim are more chamur imaser, shekain, asurim lizarim. Because maisur sheni, everybody eats. The baalim bring them up to Yerushalayim, but anybody can eat them. Bikurim are only eaten by the kohanim. So bikurim are obviously more chamur than maser sheni. And that was the kavachomer we made. If you know that you can't eat maser sheni outside the walls of Yerushalayim, then certainly you can't eat bikurim outside the walls of Yerushalayim. Adarabba, the Gemara says, you can undermine that kavachomer by saying maser chamur. Maser is actually more chamur. Shekein asur le'onein. Maser sheni is restricted to onein because it says, v'lo achalti be'oni mimenu. When it comes to the vidui maser, in there, you make a declaration that you never ate it while you were an onein. And so there's a restriction on an onein partaking of Maaser Sheni, but we find no such restriction by the Bikurim. So Maaser Sheni has a chumrah that we don't find by Bikurim, mostly because there's a requirement to eat Maaser Sheni b'simcha, to eat it in happiness, and being an onein is the antithesis of being b'simcha, or it's an emotion that can't live together with simcha. So therefore, a person who's an onein is precluded from participating in Maaser Sheni, because it says, lo achalti be'oni mimenu, which is not applicable to the case of Truma. As Rashi notes over here, onein is someone who is on yom mitat meto, the day that the individual who they are chayav talita belayam, one of the seven relatives, passed away. On the day of death, the person is considered or classified as an onein. As Riva knows, even though the Chachamim themselves believe that Bikurim are also a sort for an onein, this is according to Rabbi Shimon, the bright that's being darshaned by Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon believes that there is a difference and that an onein is restricted in Maaser Sheni and not in Bikurim. So my chumra, the todav shlamim imaser. And then also we said that a todav shlamim, you don't need to learn about having to eat it inside the walls of the city of Yerushalayim, because you can learn that from Maaser Sheni. Shukain tu'unim matan damim, v'imurim the gavim izbeach. The chumrah of todav shlamim above Bikurim is they require dam, blood, and the fats to go on the mizbeach. So a portion of it goes to the mizbeach, as opposed to Maaser Sheni, where none of it goes to the mizbeach. It says adrabo. You could say just the opposite. Maaser chamur. Maaser is more chamur than todav shlamim. Shukain tu'unim kesef tzura. The only way to redeem Maaser Sheni is to bring a minted coin and redeem the value on the minted coin. And that says, because it says, Vatsarta kesef biyadecha, that you have to take the money in your hand, but Vatsarta, the Gemara reads as, of tzura, and therefore you need a kesef tzura. In order to redeem Maaser Sheni, you need a minted coin. Whereas by Toda and Shlamim, if they get a psula guf, which allows you then to redeem the animal, that psul, that redemption can be done by anything that has value. Anything that equals the value of the item would suffice. It could be money, it could be blocks of silver, blocks of gold, it could be other merchandise that's equal to the value of the korban, and you transfer the kedusha from the korban onto that item. But that is a kula by todav shlamim versus Maaser Sheni. So once again, how can you be learning from Maaser Sheni to todav shlamim but kal vachomer if there's a chumrah that runs in the opposite direction? My chumrah de bechor mi todav shlamim. Why is a bechor considered to be more chamur than a todav shlamim? So there we didn't need to learn about eating before these zrikat damim. Then we learned from bechor that it even has application after zrikat damim. Shkein kedushato mi rechem. The bechor is more chamur because it's kadosh from birth. You don't have to have it be made kadosh at any time. Adraba todav shlamim chamurim. Todav shlamim should be considered of a higher nature. Because they have all these other avodot that are done with the korban, including smicha, we have to put your hands on it and rest your hands on it and say either a vidui, over here maybe you're saying thank you to Hashem. V'nisachim, it requires libations to be brought along with it. And a wave offering of the parts of the korban that are going to be given to the kohanim. So the chazen shok are what belong to the kohanim. That chazev shok, you have to do a tnufa, you have to do a wave offering with it. So these are all these other items that you do to a todav shlamim, which are not applicable by a korban bechor. See, here again, there's a chumrah that seems to undermine the kava chumrah that you're making. My chumrah de chatat v'asham bechor. Why are chatat and asham considered to be more chumur bechor? Shekem kodshei kodashim. Because they are known as kodshei kodashim, whereas a bechor is kodshei kalim. So of course, chatat and asham should be more chumur. Adraba, bechor chamur, shekein kedushato mirechem. When you're comparing bechor to those items, then bechor is kadosh from the outset, from birth. Maybe that makes it more chamur than chatat v'asham. My chumra de olam is chatat v'asham. Why is an olah considered to be more chamur than chatat v'asham? Shekein kalil. Because the entirety of the korban goes on the mizbeach. Adraba, why don't you say just the opposite? Chatat v'asham chamirei, shekein mechaprei. Chatat and Hashem are considered to be more significant because they grant kapara. Whereas an olah does not grant kapara. Everybody notes over here that an olah does have the effect of bringing a certain amount of kapara. It's mechaper on people were mevatel and asay, or other types of violations which don't have a particular korban or punishment associated with it, korban olah is thought to be mechaper for those abonot. If you're telling me that chatat vashamer mechaper, then I can tell you that olah is also mechaper. So what you have to say here is that the raison d'etre of a chatat and asham is kapara. They are separated out on a particular violation or aveira that the person did, and they're trying to attain kapara with the chatat and the asham. On the other hand, when it comes to the olah many times is brought as a gift. It is something that is not necessarily inherently or integrally tied to kapara. As a side effect of bringing the korban, it might give you or grant you kapara, but that's not the major purpose of the korban. The major purpose of the korban olah is to bring a doron, a gift to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So in that way, chatat v'ashem are more chamur than olah, and again, that would undermine the kal v'chomer. The kulhu, and all the remaining items, chamire me'olah, are more chamur than olah, zit behu shtei achilot. They have two opportunities to eat, whereas the korban olah only has one. Which the way Rashi explains this is, regular korbanot have a portion of it that ends up on the mizbeach, and a portion of it that's either eaten by the kohanim or the balim of the korban. On the other hand, when it comes to an olah, it only ends up on the mizbeach. There's no human consumption of the olah. So in that way, you have a chumrah by all other korbanot, which is that they end up in the mizbeach plus they're eaten, versus the korban olah, where it's only going to the mizbeach and no individuals who eat it. Although the Ritva doesn't like Rashi's explanation, because everywhere else in Shas, the fact that the olah is kalil on the mizbeach is viewed as a chumrah and not as a kula. And also over here, you're telling me that it's a kula, the fact that it only goes on the mizbeach is not eaten by individuals. It would seem to be just the opposite. But rather, the Ritva says that what it's saying over here is that all these isurim have to do with achilah. Therefore, you can't learn anything from all the other items to olah, because all the other items have a shaykhut or relevance with regards to achilat adam, which is not applicable to the olah. So now the Gemara says, now that you've shown why this whole limud of Rabbi Shimon doesn't have legs to stand on, because everything was premised on a kal v'chomer, and those kal v'chomers, we can see, can be undermined. And anytime you have a logical argument, you don't say it's a gzera the katuv. It's a logical argument that has to stand the test of logic. And over here, if you find somebody that is more unusual about the item that you are learning to, then if that's a kula, then you lose your kal v'chomer, and that's what the Gemara just showed over here. Elamai dilidei yimei Rabbi Shimon. Then what was this accolade that Bubba was saying? Well, if you have a child, you should have a child like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon's whole limud we just unwound. Delamai desfirlei lididei misarislei dekra v'dorishlei. His chiddush over here, or the brilliance of what Rabbi Shimon did, was that he was doresh the pasuk backwards. He started from the end of the pasuk and then moved to the other items in the pasuk. The brilliance in doing that was that if you went in the other direction, as Rashi points out over here, then you wouldn't have had any of the limudim, because you would have learned the most simple thing from the item that was most chamor, which, for instance, here, let's say that means that you can't eat it outside of its area, or you can't eat lifnei zrikat adam. And then, the next thing that you would come to learn, you'd say, well, I have to learn the same thing about this item as well. Ah, you want to say you can learn it from the previous item? It's not true. The previous item was more chamur. And so what Rabbi Shimon's great chiddush was to reorganize in his mind the pasuk, to start it from the end to the beginning, and taking those things that are kal, and then going to the chamur, to establish that there's a chiddush in each item that is mentioned there in the pasuk. And that was brilliant, what he did there, even though in the end we undermine the logic behind what he did, but nevertheless, the basic framework that he put together, the concept that he put together, was amazing, and that's what Rava is saying, that any mother who wants a child should have a child like Rabbi Shimon. Tosafot questions even this and says, okay, that does demonstrate some brilliance, but he says, v'im tomar, if you want to ask, akate amai mishabech Rabbi Shimon bakach, why is he complimenting Rabbi Shimon? Adraba, kasha, it's a big question, minolon the midrash hochi. Has he know to do this? And reverse the pasuk. It is a streak of brilliance. But what precipitated, or what gave him permission to darshan the pasuk backwards? So Tosafot says, I really don't understand why this is such a great thing that Rabbi Shimon did, when we don't even have a source or any understanding as to why it works. V'yesh lamar, t'shapir kadarish, that it is a good drasha, d'al korkakach b'chor, d'alta l'kodem zrika. Because you can't say that Bechor comes to teach you about before Srikat Adam. Alpha Pish Niftab Kodem Litoda. Even though it's written before the Korban HaTodah. To Mikol Makom, Ihochi Ata Lishtek Minei. Because if that's what the purpose was, let the pasuk leave it out. Yaflin and Leish Shapir Mitoda Shekatu Basof. And you just could have written Todah, we would have learned from there, and then everything else would have been a Kal V'chomer. Kach Nira the Mashiach, Uk the Perish, Bitosafot, Talkorchak Todah, Acha the Kodim Zrika, Tisurachina Lekka L'Ukma Ba. What he's showing here is that the Pasuk is necessary to learn that way, because otherwise the Pasuk was completely unnecessary. The items that you would have learned, you all learned them from a Kal V'chomer, from the items that are mentioned later in the Pasuk. So if that's the case, then you wouldn't need to write both items. The fact that you wrote both items already indicates there must be something unique or special about the item that's written. If that's the case, then you start working backwards in the Pasuk, and you can build up unique cases for each item that is mentioned in the Pasuk. Right, so now the Gemara says, "B'chi mazirin min adin." There's something very fundamentally wrong with this whole drasha of Rabbi Shimon, which is, since when are you allowed to establish a lav through a kal v'chomer? We know the principle, which we've seen many times, of ein onshin min adin, that one is not allowed to figure out the punishment that is appropriate for this individual or this violation based on a kal v'chomer from another punishment. That has two views within the Rishonim. Either the failure is the fact that maybe there's a pircha to that kal v'chomer. That's what Rashi noted for us before. That's what we noted that many of the Rishonim believe, which is, anytime you're using a logical argument, you're at risk that that logic could be undermined. And how can we put someone to death or punish someone based on that logic if the logic is possibly fallible? And even though we can't see the undermining or issue in the Kal V'chomer, nevertheless, there may be someone else who has a perspective that would undermine it. And based on that, you can't give punishment based on a Kal V'chomer. On the other hand, there are other Rishonim who see it simply as a problem fundamentally in a Kal V'chomer, which is, a Kal V'chomer says there was a lighter violation that got this punishment. So the higher or more severe violation should certainly get that punishment. The issue might be is that that punishment is either ra'ui for that violation of the Kal. It's not ra'ui for the one who does the more severe violation. Or even stating it more starkly, you could suggest that the more severe violation is not entitled to the kapara of this punishment. And therefore you can't learn a Kal V'chomer by unshin min adin. That we already established, we mentioned in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, as well as in the beginning of this Masechta. What the Gemara says is that there's also a separate restriction against Ein Mazirin Min Adin. Not only Ein Onshin Min Adin, but you also can't give a warning based on a Kal V'chomer, or you can't basically create a lav or negative precept through a Kal V'chomer. And seemingly for the same reasons that go into Ein Onshin Min Adin. Ha, afilu man damar onshin min adin. Even according to the one who believes that you can give an onesh through a Kal V'chomer, ein mazirin min adin, you still can't give us harot or levin min adin min a Kal V'chomer. And Rashi quotes as the source for this Rabbi Yitzchak's opinion that we saw in the previous perek, who says unshin min adin, but nevertheless says ein mazirin min adin, because by achoto he allowed you to learn a Kal V'chomer in order to give the punishment arayot, the full-fledged sister, based on the fact that one would get punished for a half-sister, whether through the mother or the father, but certainly you should get punished for a full-fledged sister who uses that Kal V'chomer. On the other hand, when it comes to the lav of achoto, or once again, half-sister through a mother or father is mentioned, but a complete sister is not mentioned, over there he doesn't use a Kal V'chomer and says you need the extraneous achoto to teach you about the lav. So from Rabbi Yitzchak, you see that he thinks that onshin min adin, through achoto, but ain't mazirin adin, because as a rav achoto, he has written explicitly and not through a kal v'chomer. The Ramban over here criticizes Rashi's explanation and says that Rashi's explanation is based on the havamino of the Gemara back there. In the maskana of the Gemara, that's not the position of Rabbi Yitzchak, and therefore it's hard to argue that there is such a position out there. But rather, what the Ramban basically says is, we don't find anybody in Shas who says that mazirin min adin, that you're allowed to give malkot based on a kal v'chomer. And he actually ascribes the position to Rabbi Shimon himself, who we see in the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Ayin Dalet, says that unshin min adin, yet he believes ein mazirin min adin, because there's nobody who does believe Mazirin Min Hadin. And so therefore the Gemara's question is, how could Rabbi Shimon and his whole Braita set it up in such a manner that everything is learned through a Kal V'Chomer when that would not do anything for you? You can't create an Azhara through a Kal V'Chomer. My answer is Isura Ba'alma. Rabbi Shimon is not coming to tell you that these are Lavin that you get Makot for. So I'm going to teach you that there is a negative commandment associated with these violations. And again, as we pointed out before, Rashi says many of these items are already mitzvot asay, or isur asay, that derive from the asay. And over here, all he's doing is saying that there's an additional isur associated with them. We're not going to give you malkot for it, but there is a lav that you could particularly associate with this violation. But in that way, we get out of the problem of ein mazirin min hadin, because we're not giving malkot over here. And Tosafot explains that the Surah Ba'alma here means that you would get Malkot for eating Chutz L'Choma for each of these items, which is actually the base scenario, what you're speaking about here by Maaser, and it will be equally applicable to each of these items. Everything else that we learned through the Kal V'Chomer will be in Surah Ba'alma, which will just be an additional Lotase Nosaf that will be associated, each one, topically that's relevant to it, but it would not result in Malkot. But there would be Malkot for the base of eating outside the Choma for each of these items. And that's how we explain the word Lokeh in the statements of Rabbi Shimon. Whereas the Ritva just says the word Lokeh here, it doesn't literally mean Lokeh. It means a lav that normally would result in Malkot. Over here, it doesn't result in Malkot because it's learned through a Kal V'Chomer. But never since, Lokeh is synonymous with lav rather than with Malkot. Where it says, Rama Roba Zar Shachal Mina Ola Lifnei Zrika Chutz L'Choma, and an individual is not a Kohen who eats from a Korban Olah before Zrikat Adam, Chutz L'Choma, outside the boundaries in which it's supposed to be eaten, the Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Shimon of the Braita that we brought before, Lokeh Chamesh, he gets 5 sets of Malkot. For that reason, it makes it hard to answer Isura Ba'alma we're speaking about here when Rava himself is bringing a statement that according to Rabbi Shimon, you would get 5 Malkot. Now, as opposed to the Braita itself, which seems to say the word Lokeh in it, nevertheless, there you can claim that it is a Tanaic work, and it meant Lokeh Lav Davka. But when it comes to an Amora, we have an expectation by an Amora that he gives exact language, and he doesn't use this opaque type of language, which would make it hard to understand what he's saying. And if Rava says Lokeh, that means he meant Lokeh, and not just mean Isura, but rather Lokeh. And now you have a problem here because all of these Malkiot come from those Kal V'Chomers of Rabbi Shimon. As Rashi points out here, the 5 that you will get 4 are Chad Mishum Chutz L'Choma, 1 because you're eating outside the boundaries in which an Olah should be eaten, and that is a Kal V'Chomer Mimaser. Number 2 is that you're eating before Zrikat Adam, which is also a Kal V'Chomer from Todah and Shlamim. The 3rd thing is Zar. You are a person who's not supposed to partake in these items. Even after Zrikat Adam, you're not allowed to do that. The Eiti B'Kal V'Chomer B'Bechor, that you learn from the Bechor. Cho Shekein, Lifnei Zrika, and certainly before Zrika, Zar should not partake. So those are 3 sets of Malkiot. 4th set comes, Mishom Ochel Chutz L'Klaim. But not only are you eating outside the walls of Yerushalayim, you're eating outside the boundaries of the Azara itself. The Eiti B'Kal V'Chomer B'Chatat V'Hasham, which comes from Chatat Vasham, which narrowed the scope of the boundaries from being the walls of Yerushalayim to the Kalaim. And so to an Olah, if you learn from Kal V'Chomer from Chatat Hasham, that would also be a 4th restriction you are violating. And the 5th restriction, Chad Mishum Ochel Olah, Fafilu Kohen Ubetoch HaKalaim. That's the final thing that we said in the Braita, that Rabbi Shimon says, the Olah comes to teach you that a Korban Olah is restricted to everyone. Not just to Zarim, but even to Kohanim. And it has to be eaten inside the areas that are delineated for the Korban Olah. And here, if a Kohen who eats it, he'll be in that additional violation, which is the restriction against consuming the Olah. And over here, where he's a Zar, Kol Shekein, that he'd be punished for that same Lav. And therefore, you get 5 sets of Malkiot over here. Gemara answers, Chamisha Isurim Havu. That when Rava said Lokeh, it really meant 5 Isurim, even though in general we don't find Amorite speaking that way. But because of this problem of Ein Mazirin Min Hadin, it must mean that when he said Lokeh Chamesh, it's after the Lashon HaBraita that says Lokeh, but it doesn't literally mean get Makot, but rather just an Isura Ba'alma. It says, Ranan Tanan, what about our Mishnah? Elohein Elohim. These are individuals who get Malkot. And amongst those items that get Malkot, as Rashi points out over here, Tani Bikurim is one of them. And Ochel Kodshei Kodashim Chutz L'Klayim. Eating Kodshei Kodashim outside of the Azara is also something that's mentioned in our Mishnah. And what is the source for these items? It is Rabbi Shimon's Drasha in the Braita. So how could you claim here that we don't give Malkot based on Rabbi Shimon's position when here you have our Mishnah telling you, you're Arlokeh, you get Malkiot for Bikurim, which derives from Rabbi Shimon's position in the Braita. Ella, the Gemara says, Kro Yitei Rahu, Michdektiv. The Pasuk is actually extraneous. And now let us take a look and say, the Pasuk earlier in Dvarim Yud Bet, Pasuk Bob says, Ve'aveitem shama olotechem ve'zibchechem ve'et masrotechem ve'et trumat yadchem ve'nidrechem ve'nidvotechem u'bechorot bekarchem ve'tzonachem. So here you have a Pasuk that lists all the same items that are found in Pasuk Yud Zayin that we quoted the Lotus from Lotu Ukam. And what Rashi notes over here is all you have to do with the Pasuk that's brought in Pasuk Vav that mentions all these items is append a little phrase at the end which says, Lo tuchal le'ochlam. You can't eat them. And then you'd be done. Why does the Pasuk come back and Yud Zayin and repeat everything that is in Pasuk Vav and say, Lo tuchal le'ochol, bisharecha, that there you can't eat? The fact that the Torah went out of its way to repeat every single item comes to teach you something significant about each item. Now Rashi over here notes a number of things. The first of which is, don't tell me that if you did that, you'd end up with a lav shibichlalot, which is a single lav that has multiple manifestations. And Rashi says, v'lav shibichlalot lohavi. It would not be considered a lav shibichlalot. Kevin da'kula koi. Because the lav of lotu chalo echlam is applicable to every item that is noted in the pasuk. Havi lav akol chad v'chad. It's the equivalent of saying, Lo tuchal le'echol, dot, 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 or a colon, and then you're listing all the items that are in the pasuk. So then what is a case of a lav shibichlalot? Lo tuchal kim tzliyesh. By the Korban HaPesach says, don't eat the Korban Pesach except roasted. But the Nazir restricts him from anything that is a derivative of the grape or the wine, anything that comes out of them. So that is a generic statement or a general statement that incorporates many different items. And the items are not enumerated there in the pasuk. There are some items that are enumerated, but there are others that are not, that are included. That makes it into a lav shibichlalot because it's an all-encompassing statement that captures many things beyond what's mentioned there. On the other hand here, they say lo tuchal le'ochlam, that's not just a general statement, do not eat them. It's do not eat them, meaning the things that are mentioned in that pasuk, and each one of them is delineated separately or mentioned separately. Rashi claims it's not a lav shibichlalot, although there are those like the Ramban who argue and say that it would be a lav shibichlalot. So Rashi notes, first of all, it's not a lav shibichlalot. Number two is, the pasuk's extraneous because of pasuk vav. You could have just had that with a little appendix that said lo tuchal le'ochlam. The fact that then in Pasuk Yud Zayin repeats every single item and says, Lo tuchal le'ochol b'sharecha, that comes to teach you. Umbehu b'rachmano lomali, to rachmano lo tuchal le'ochlam, mi adar mefarish behu rachmano lomali. So why did the Torah then go back over every one of them again? Ela yuchadu lehu lave, l'chol chad v'chad, to give a special lav for each one of them. Now, Rashi over here says that the Gemara's conclusion is the following. What we said about Rabbi Shimon before, Isurei Ba'alma, that is true. The whole bright that he brought before and the Kal V'chomers that he makes are all just Isurei Ba'alma. The two items in the Mishnah that are mentioned that require Malkot, those come from these Limudim. Two things that the Gemara quoted are Kodshei Kodashim Chutz L'Klayim, Kodshei Kodashim outside the Azara, and Bikurim Pnei Kriya, that there's a restriction there that gets you Malkot. And what Rashi is saying here is the Gemara is telling you where you get Malkot from. By Bikurim, which is the first thing in the list that's enumerated over there, you'll get Malkot for Bikurim because there's nothing else to darshan with regards to Bikurim. Came in Deinu Inyan, lo, and since you don't need each one of these items for itself, Tneyu Inyan the Davar Acher. Use it for something else. Hilkach Bikurim. By Bikurim, it's lo chel ad shelo kara lehen. It's coming to teach you that you may not eat them before there was kriyat bikurim ata. And then each one afterwards individually comes for its purpose. And then, Bim Tomar, B'chol HaKodeshim HaKtubim Kan Tayech, M'zein Alav, Inyan Lo'chel Lifnei Zrika, B'kulan Chutz Mibikurim. The truth is that you could use this pasuk to teach you that don't eat these items before Zrika Tadam, and that would be a sufficient use of each one of these items there. Ein Hochanami. Rashi says, that's right. Umadnita Diktani Lokin, our Mishnah that says you get Malkot, B'chol Kodeshim HaKodeshim Chutz L'Kleim, you learn out of a separate pasuk of basar b'sadeh treif lo tochelu. Kachman v'lokeh kamesh to kamar rova kamisha as isurei kamar. What Rashi says is that the Gemara does not back away from the answer of Rova coming to tell you that according to Rabbi Shimon they're just isurim over here, and the Braita itself that Rabbi Shimon brings is just coming to teach you about isurim. And the only reason that Bikurim gets Malkot out of the Pasuk is because the Pasuk itself has no bearing on Bikurim if you learn it for what everything else is. So based on that, for Rashi, the only thing that comes out of the Pasuk is three different types of Malkiot. For Maaser, you'll get Malkot for eating outside the Chumah, and to give you Malkot for Chutz L'Chumah in the baseline of each of these items. Each of these items will have a Malkot for Chutz L'Chumah. That's the basic learning mode of the Pasuk. And then the Drosh of Rabbi Shimon about the Srichut of each one of these through the Kal v'Chomer will result in an Isur Chadash. That means each item will teach you two things. Bikurim, you'll get Malkot for eating before Kriyat Bikurim. For the remaining items that I mentioned there, which is Todash Shlamim, Chatat Hasham, Bechor, and Olah, you'll get Malkot if you eat it Lifnei Zrikat Damim. All the other Isurim that are mentioned there through the Kal v'Chomer, that's exactly what they are. They're Isurim and not Lav for Malkot. So now we have where the mission tells us you get Malkot for Bikurim, Lifnei Kriyah. We also now need to know, where do we know that if you eat Kodshei Kodashim, Chutz L'Klaim, that you get Malkot? Where do we know that from? Rashi says, not from here. You have a different pasuk of Basar Basadeh Trifa Lo Tokelu. That is the Shita of Rashi. The underlying position that we took before, that Rova Spivadi Serim remains intact. And all the Gemara over here is noting that the extraneous nature of the pasuk teaches you that there is Malkot by Bikurim for Lifnei Kriyah. And the question really is only from our Mishnah. And what the answer of the Gemara here is coming to deal with is the Mishnah, not with Rova. Rova is Isure. Mishnah that says Malkot, we have to deal with that. The answer to that question is the extraneous nature of the Pasuk gets you the Malkot by Bikurim. And for Kodshei Kodashim, that comes from a totally different Pasuk, which is Ubasar Basadeh Treifa Lo Tochelu, which the Gemara learns from there that anytime you eat something outside of its perimeter, then you are in violation of a lav. And that's what Tosfot says over here, V'yesh Lamar, the Mistavla de Rabbi Shimon, the Chol Kra'ata, the Shnei Devarim. Tosfot comes to two things, Latuti Isur Chadash, to teach you a new Isur in each of the items, V'gam Le'tui Nami Malkot, Chutz L'Choma, and to give you Malkot for Chutz L'Choma in the baseline of each of these items. So each of these items will have a Malkot for Chutz L'Choma, that's the basic learning mode of the Pasuk. And then the fact that the Pasuk repeated each of these items separately teaches you again the same limud that you'd give Malkot for Chutz L'Choma. But obviously you don't need that twice, Chutz L'Choma, because it already says Lo Tuchal Lecho Bisharecha, which would have referenced back to the Pasuk Vav and enumerated each of these items for a lav of Chutz L'Choma. So then when it repeats all of the items again, it gives you a second time the Isser of Chutz L'Choma. And since obviously it's unnecessary to do it twice, each one of them will then come to Tneu the Davar Acher, will give you a new Chiddush, and the Chiddush will be the lowest common denominator of Chiddush that you can have. So by Bikurim, the Chiddush is that you can't eat Lifnei Kriyah. For all the other items that are enumerated in the list, that'll teach you that you can't eat Lifnei Zrikat Damim. And then the Drosh of Rabbi Shimon about the Srichut of each one of these through the Kal v'Chomer will result in an Isur Chadash that doesn't have Malkot associated with it. That means each item will teach you two things. Beyond the fact that you get Malkot for Chutz L'Choma, and for one other thing that you get Malkot for, it will also teach you these other additional Isurim that will not have Malkot that are associated with it. And in that way, you will explain why our Mishnah has Malkot by Chutz L'Choma for Maaser Sheni and Kodshim Kalim, why you have Malkot for eating before there's Kriyat Bikurim, and in terms of the Malkot for eating Kodshei Kodashim Chutz L'Klaim, we already noted that comes from Basar Basada Trefa Lo Tochelu, a totally different source. Now, The Bali and Tosafot take issue with Rashi. They bring Rashi's explanation. They give more in-depth explanation of Rashi's explanation. Then Tosafot questions that because of the unevenness of the application of when you consider something to get makot versus when you consider something to be an isur. And therefore then Tosafot reverses his position and says the following. Chutz l'choma will be the isur that comes from a kal v'chomer. And the malkot will be given for the davar achadash. And that is, the kal v'chomer tells you that if you get malkot for chutz l'choma b'matzer, then certainly you should get it by bikurim. Well, bikurim, you can't get malkot because it's in mazirim in a din. Nevertheless, the kal v'chomer will teach you there's an isur of chutz l'choma b'bikurim. But they will also teach you that there is malkot for a violation of eating bikurim before kriyat bikurim. And so then that way, Tosafot says that the isurim are all those kal v'chomers that you made, and the malkot will be given for the chiddush in each one of those items. And that's how you know to bring the chiddush to each case, because the kal v'chomer obviates the need for the base item to be there. Again, you can't get malkot for it, but it still takes care of the isur, and it makes more sense to say that each item is there for the chiddush that it brings, and therefore the malkot will be associated with that chiddush. As we say, Kidamrin and Ba'alma, as Tosafot says, that we say from the Gemara Pesachim, that as long as we can make a chiddush, we'd rather do that rather than adding on levine to the same violation. Even though over here it would add on malkot to a separate violation, a violation of bikurim and not maser, nevertheless, when we take it to the chiddush, it's not like we're taking the lav and taking it somewhere else completely. It's still about bikurim itself. And if you have to make a decision where to put the malkot by bikurim, it would make more sense to put it on something that's unique to bikurim rather than something that you could have learned from a kal v'chomer mimaser. And so therefore we'll leave the kal v'chomer as an isur and the chiddush will get malkot. And then they bring the shita tari who says that when the Gemara backs away from the suggestion in Rava that he's speaking about isurim, it backs away completely. And basically what it says is now you're going to get malkot for each one of these items. That will explain why our Mishnah says lokeh, but it will also explain why Rova says lokeh, because you actually will get malkot. And that is because the Ri suggests over here, Verim ifaresh, lichudei lav, kolchad v'chad, dehanei yitur, ligluy elan. The extraneous nature of the pasuk comes to teach us by each one of these items, the kol isurim, shanu shomim, bikulan, mikalim v'chamurim alalu, the isurim that we derive from each one of these through a kal v'chomer, shbukulam, yesh chiyuv malkot. You're going to get malkot for this. That means that you're literally going to get malkot for it. And basically what he's saying is that the nature, the extraneous nature of the pasuk, basically takes what otherwise would have been an illegal type of limud, which is mazirin min adin. And over here, you're doing it through a kal v'chomer. And basically what it does is the yutur, the extraneous nature of the pasuk, says, despite the fact that normally you couldn't learn this way, but because we're extraneous over here, each item comes to teach you that you will get malkot for this item through the kal v'chomer, the mazirin min adin that we're invoking in this situation. Even though according to that, it would work out that the reason you get malkot in our Mishnah, per kodshei kodashim, chutz l'klayim, is from the pasuk v'lo tu'uchal le'afol b'sharecha, but as Rashi notes already, you could have learned that out from basar b'sadeh, treifa lo tochelu, Tosafot says, ein ochanami. It's just that the Gemara had a Mesora that the Mishnah wasn't relying on that Pasuk, but rather the Pasuk of Rabbi Shimon. On the other hand, the Ramban believes that the source for the Malkot in our Mishnah is not Basar Basadeh Trefai Do Tuchelu, like Rashi says, but rather the Malkot come from the Pasuk of Lo Tuchal Echol B'Sharecha, based on the Maskona that Tosafot comes to, that Rabbi Shimon is the Surayer through the Kal v'Chomers, and the additional chiddush by each item, because of the extraneous nature of the pasuk, teaches you that you'll get malkot in each of those cases. And so therefore, he feels that the conclusion of the Gemara here is that these lavim do exist, and the lavim are not only surim, but also malkiot that are associated with those lavim. Okay, we're going to stop here, five lines down on the top of Yud Chet Amud Aleph.